Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD. My name is Emily Files, and for the next hour, we'll be talking to school board candidates. Joining me in the studio are Michelle O'Brien and Glenn Brown. If you have questions for our candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, let's have each introduce themselves and say why they're running for school board. Glenn, go ahead.
My name is Glenn Brown. I'm seeking a position on school board. Moved to Ketchikan about 3.5 years ago with my family. We were looking for a slower pace in a smaller town, and we found both here. In a prior career, I practiced law in Pennsylvania for about 18 years. I now run the Ketchikan Youth Court program, great program here in town. And I had served on a school board in Pennsylvania, and I enjoyed the school board service, and it's meaningful work. It's important work, a lot of difficult decisions, but I think I bring some reasonableness and good judgment to it. So I hope to serve in that way.
What prompted you to run for school board in your former hometown?
I have a father of five. I had a vested interest in the public schools there. It's a good school system, not without its challenges, but I had a stake in it, and I had time, and I thought I brought an aptitude to some of the policy issues that a school board addresses.
Okay. And Michelle, you're the current school board president. Explain why you want to run to continue on with your role.
You know, I think it was almost a no-brainer because as I thought about it, it came down to the fact that I love kids. I love kids. I love seeing their successes. I love seeing everything that they do and the potentials within our school district. This would be my third term. And years ago, I was brand new to the community, only 6 months here, and I was shocked that no one ran for school board. And so I thought, well, I'll just put my name in as a write-in candidate. And so I did, and even more shockingly, I actually got elected. So what I'm hoping is that over these years that my experience and what you've come to expect and what I've been able to deliver, what we as a team, as the school board, have been able to deliver has been what you've expected. Always the goal is to better our schools and better the ambitions of our students.
If you have a question for our school board candidates, call in at 225-9655. Michelle, I wanted to ask you, it seemed like it was a hard decision for you to choose to run this term. You filed at the very last minute. So why was that a difficult decision?
You know, it was a difficult decision for me, only to a certain extent. In my mind, I was always going to run for school board. I have other responsibilities around the state and in our community that were kind of weighing on me, i.e. being Rotary District Governor and the years 2016, 2017, serving on the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, as well as being the chair of the Peace Health Donor Recognition Committee. And I thought to myself, do I want to do this? Do I want to continue with school board? Which was really in my heart, right? And then a lot of folks, and I know it sounds like so canned in this town, right? A lot of folks that were all over the map politically said to me, you should run for mayor. And I really thought about that. And I thought about the things that were going on in my life. And it was this one night, and this is going to sound so corny. It was that one night when I was sitting with my daughter, Holly. And we have kids over. I like to give the diplomas to the kids. I like to hear their successes. I like to talk to the teachers. And it was like tears in my eyes. I know that sounds so corny, but I'm like, I got to run for school board. Mm-hmm. I got to run for school board.
Okay, thank you. So, Glenn, what would your priorities be as a school board member in Ketchikan?
I really think the district, the board functions well. The district, though a source of pride in town, there are always areas of growth. And I think we need to be responsive to some of the things that are going on in the community now. There's a lot of development. Various industries look like they're really going to resurge in the area. And I think the school district has to anticipate those needs going forward. Mentioned in the earlier hour, everything from Bokan to the shipyard to Coast Guard expansion to second growth timber. At some point, the litigation will end, and there may be some logging going on. So they all stand to potentially impact student populations, so the district needs to be responsive to that. I think that's something we need to keep an eye on. I would really like to see, and it, just something that in my gut fits this town, but as much as we can put into vocational technical training here is should be a priority. And I think the district has done a lot on that front, but I would certainly expect to be a booster of that. This is a place where kids graduate, and we need, it's really incumbent upon the district to have them prepared to enter a workforce with skills that are going to produce a livable wage. This isn't a place where you can go necessarily and collect your four-year degree from an undergrad degree and then go work in middle management for Prudential. Those jobs aren't here. You're not going to work in a big cube farm with a very tidy little job. People in Ketchikan do things. They make things, they build things, and they do things. And we need to have the kids prepared with skills to take those jobs.
Are there any specific ways that you've thought about how the school district could improve that?
I think we're looking for opportunities. Like I said, I think they've done a nice job, you know, more of a partnering with the shipyard. I think we're looking for those links to if the mining, if Bokan really gets going, we should be looking for opportunities to partner there. Anywhere that you can get the kids' real-life experience, I think that's really kind of, that's something that the district, and I'm not suggesting that the district isn't open or hasn't been aggressive in that front, but it's certainly something that would be of great interest to me if I were elected.
And Michelle, what would your priorities as a school board member be?
I think my priorities are definitely an inclusive education for all of our students, and that would mean offering an education style that is available to students despite what their learning style is. So, for example, something that's very important to me, and I believe that is very important to the success of our district, is Revilla. That alternative education and the way that learning style is influenced with our students, as well as Fast Track. You know, Fast Track is one of the top delivery methods for long-distance education in the state, and it's still growing. So I think it's really great that our district has offered these types of educational methods to our students. And I would agree with Glenn, the fact that we need to offer, not every kid is going to go to college. We have to offer vocational options for our kids, because let's be realistic, in today's economy, whether it be in Ketchikan or outside of Ketchikan, these kids need to be able to earn a living.
So one thing that you mentioned, Glenn, is the potential population increase from big projects in Ketchikan and the area. Recently, there's been some stress because of last-minute enrollments at elementary schools, having to add new teacher positions at the last minute. Do you think capping enrollment in elementary schools is a good idea? Meaning that a parent wouldn't be able to choose whichever elementary school if the enrollment was already full. If they wanted to have their second grader at Houtling and the second grade was full, they would have to go to Point Higgins or Fawn Mountain or something like that.
I think the board and the administration of the school district have a responsibility to run the district as efficiently as they can. And if we have surges in enrollment, can you ever rule that out? No, I don't. Not responsibly. It's probably easy to say, no, forevermore, you can go wherever you want to go, regardless of the impact on that school. That's not reality. So as we have growth, hopefully, as we have the growth of these industries, management is not the board's job. The board governs. But you certainly want to, in that governance role, make sure that the administration is looking at those potentials and looking at options. And is one of those options perhaps capping? It may be in due course.
Michelle?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there may be, excuse me, a situation where we may end up looking at boundaries. However, I would remind folks that it wasn't 2 years ago where we weren't necessarily looking at shutting down schools, but we were struggling to achieve 150 student enrollment at the Tongass School of Arts and Sciences. That doesn't mean that they're a bad school. They're an awesome school. But with that being said, when you have a shortfall below the 150 student enrollment, it's a huge financial hit. So now we are having this burgeoning student growth. And so how do we handle that? So looking forward, one of the important things that we need to do as a school board, and we've already put this in place as of the last board meeting, is to restructure our budgeting process to have a work session, hopefully with the Borough Assembly, in December to say, hey, look, these are the possible situations that might be facing our school district. What are those potential financial ramifications?
In terms of population growth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've had to hire two more teachers this year, unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm. Which hasn't happened in the past like that.
No, it hasn't. We're 0.6 students above what we were in 2008. So there's clearly a population growth. Now, think about this. If the shipyard is hiring an additional 300 employees, you've got a hospital expansion, you have possible National Guard expansion, Coast Guard expansion, mining. We need a real plan moving forward because you've got a student count that the state funds between October 1st and roughly October 20th, and that's how the state funds our school district. Now, what if, just saying, what if 100 students show up in January? We have a responsibility to educate those students, regardless of how it financially impacts our community. So that's why I want to start the conversation with the Borough Assembly early before they start their budget process, so that if that happens, how are we going to deal with this? What if the shipyard has 100 families that move in, and let's just say there's 100 students, and let's just say that there's 10 intensive need students. The financial impacts to our community are huge. We can't just say, oh, I'm so sorry, we can't educate your child.
Do you have anything that you've thought about in terms of what the district could do to prepare for a sudden increase like that?
Well, yeah, exactly that. What I'm saying is we are going to have a work session in early December, hopefully with the Borough Assembly, to mull over the ramifications of any sudden student impacts that might affect our district. Because if you think about roughly $13,000 per student, regular students, and not to say that every student isn't regular, but we have other students that have intensive needs. And those from the state are funded between $75,000 and $88,000 per year. So let's add in, say, of those 100 students, 10 intensive needs students. And then you do the math. So we need to plan ahead because the borough has other responsibilities. The state certainly will not be funding us in January for additional students. I think the growth is great for our community, but we need to have the foresight to plan ahead.
So are you saying something like an emergency fund?
Perhaps, and there's already a reserve in place, and kudos to the borough for putting that in place. But we need to have serious discussions on, all right, if A happens, we'll do this. If B happens, we could do this. If C happens, we'll do this. Because there's a lot of unknowns at this point, all of which are great for the community of Ketchikan, but could have serious financial ramifications for our community and our school district.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, do you have anything to add about what the school district could do to prepare for the population increase?
Again, we encountered some of this in the district that where I served on school board in the past, where farm field became housing development, which brought a pretty impressive concentration of young families. And our schools at that time had boundaries within the township. So we had one school that became very, very small. So it's really taking some of those experiences, talking to the administration about What about those scenarios where you have an influx of population that are more likely to be drawn towards Point Higgins because they're further north? What are the capacities of the buildings? You know, it's dollars. It's also space. It's staff. There's a lot of components to it. So I think asking the board's job is to ask those questions and prompt those inquiries amongst the administration. Mm-hmm. Again, management and governance, but on the governance role, you're certainly encouraging thought along those lines.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question for our school board candidates, call in at 225-9655. So the school board has had a tense relationship with the borough assembly, which helps fund the school district. How would you work to make that relationship better? Glenn?
It's just a matter. I mean, I've watched with some dismay some of the discourse over the last year or so, especially. And I would find myself wincing while I was reading the paper at some of the comments. It's a friction point that is by design. The portion of the budget from the school district that comes from the borough, there's an ask and an answer, and there's going to be friction there. Unfortunately, it seems as though it's bred suspicions and just general bad feelings amongst some members of each body. I would hope that I could bring some more moderate tones to that discussion. In a lot of cases, the quality of the discourse is just a product of a little bit of tolerance, a little bit of understanding, more information and sooner. I think I can certainly, it's relationships too. I mean, you only build distrust when you don't really know the other people. And I think if you can build those personal relationships, there's a credibility that comes with the ask. And I think, I certainly think I can help with that. And my personal interaction with people, I think I can bring that credibility to that discussion. Mm-hmm. Look forward to it, actually.
Michelle?
Well, it's been my experience that I agree. The fiery rhetoric has not been helpful. However, the inability to be direct has also not been helpful. But it dawned upon me that perhaps the answer in the past couple of years has come before the ask. And that's what I hope to change this year. So with that being said, as I mentioned before, having the work session planning for perhaps future growth. We currently have a wish list from the various schools as to what they really need. So as opposed to the borough saying, oh, by the way, you have this much, we'd like to come forward and say, this is what we really need to educate our students. And that doesn't mean saying, by the way, we need funding to the cap. That has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with the real need for our schools. As Agnes Moran kind of identified and said, by the way, the science department needs some more money. Well, let's not just identify one department. Let's identify a kind of global need here. What do our schools really need? So my hope is the fact that we can get together with the borough in December and let's plan for the future in terms of future growth potential in our community. But then what I'd like to do is to be able to say, hey guys, we really need this. And here's the reasons why. Because the borough starts their budget process in early January. That's typically when we start our budget process. And will we be able to give extremely accurate numbers in December? No, we won't, because the school budget process is extremely fluid. However, we can give them an idea of what we're looking at, and then they can make an accurate decision on what they feel is the necessity for the school district. So that's what I'm kind of hoping to achieve. If we can have that communication, then perhaps we can avoid the fiery rhetoric over the past several years. And furthermore, there's been some discussion, and I sit on the Assembly Borough Liaison Committee as well. What is the borough wanting for budget reporting? This has changed like and I'm kind of exaggerating here, but it might be like 13 times of the last 5 years. Let's get a standard reporting method so that we all understand that you're going to get this. Here's the information that you've got, and there you can make a decision. I think that'll go forward solving a lot of problems.
So clarifying the communication process?
The communication process, the timeline process, and actually what the district needs. We don't want to be greedy. We don't need funding to the cap. I've said that, and I've said that time and time again. That's ridiculous. The community can't bear that, and we don't need it. What we do need is a realistic budget for our students.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember a time when the school board has decided not to fund something, and that's been a difficult decision, but you have made that call because you feel like you can't say yes to everything, even if it might make for a better experience in education?
Oh, Lord. After the last 5 years, I think there's been a lot of times where we haven't been. But, you know, I think it's important for the public to understand that, you know, I love John Harrington. He's a good friend, and he's a very smart man. But the overall school budget as presented, $31 million, $47 million, et cetera, is not what the local funding is. And a lot of that comes, our staff has done an amazing job obtaining grants and federal funding, and there have been additional state funding that has been kind of inserted to the school district. That doesn't mean local funding. So have we had to say no? Yeah, we have a couple of times. We really have. And I'll give big kudos to the Borough Assembly for, it was last year or the year before, where they funded our activities. I believe it was $150,000. So we're so very thankful for that. I think what it boils down to is it's not a matter of the school board saying no. It's a matter of knowing what you can and what you cannot do. And we've been very grateful for what the Borough Assembly has bestowed upon us in addition to the regular budget. But I'm going to tell you what, coming forward, there's going to be a time. If it cuts any further, there will be major cuts.
If the funding from the Borough Assembly to the school district falls more. Okay. You mentioned something about activities costs. Funding for sports and other activity travel is a huge burden on the teams and the school district. Do you think the state or Alaska Student Activities Association has a responsibility to help fund travel for teams off of the road system, such as those in Southeast? Glenn?
That's for me. That's a good question. It's funny that you ask it of me. One of our most difficult episodes on our prior school board was the imposition of activity fees. So we were so far away from what kids that participate in sports here do in terms of raising their own money. This was a situation where the school district funded virtually all of it, and we were talking about imposing, you know, a $35 or $40 a year fee, activity fee, to try to raise some money to offset some of the extracurriculars.
And this is in Pennsylvania.
That was in Pennsylvania, a very far, far place from here. The travel, I mean, when we moved here, I was astounded at the costs of getting teams around, but also impressed with the fact that it was important enough to the communities that these kids did travel and compete. I never had really given it thought before we moved here. Do I believe that the state has an obligation to fund that? No, I don't. I think the way that it happens right now is how it happens. It's an incredible burden. And does it require the kids? The other thing we learned when we moved here was that anytime we went to the supermarket or to the store, it cost us $10 when we went in and $10 when we left with all of the raffles. And that's how travel happens. That's how these funds are raised, and the community is just super about it. I think what we have works. I wouldn't necessarily start pointing fingers and saying, well, this isn't our job. This is someone else's job, the state's job.
So you think the burden on teams off of the road system is something that just comes with living on an island or in a place that is expensive to get in and out of?
It sounds harsh, but nobody's here by accident. There are ways to leave if you choose. No, you're really talking about, you know, should we somehow socialize the cost across the state of these teams traveling? It just comes with the territory, in my judgment.
Okay. Michelle?
I would agree with what Glenn is saying. You know, we've got a fundraising burden of several hundred thousand dollars a year just to get our kids to be able to compete effectively. And kudos to our local businesses and community that come out and support time and time again to amazing levels. You know, we've got a resolution going in front of the Alaska Association of School Boards this year that is advocating for state travel being funded by deed. However, is that realistically going to happen? I don't think so. I really don't think so.
You don't think that it will be approved by the Association of School Boards, or you don't think that the state would?
I don't think so. And, you know, it was a resolution that was brought up last year at the annual conference, mm-hmm. and we advocated for it, and as did several others. You know, think about this. The schools that are way, way north, they actually have to charter planes mm-hmm. to send their team somewhere. So we're thinking of ferries and airline and everything else for our students, but these folks are having to charter planes. So it's a very popular idea, excuse me, but I don't know if statewide it's really going to happen. And, you know, if folks don't know this, when we talk about resolutions, you know, we can propose all the resolutions that we want, and the Alaska Association of School Boards can say, oh, that's great, that's a great resolution. But really, when it's put before the legislature, is it really going to be approved? I don't think this one is going to be approved, because look at the Anchorage schools. They can get on a bus and go to a game and come back the same night like some of us in the lower 48 might have been used to. Unfortunately, that's not a reality for our kids. I think that the better way to concentrate on travel cost is to lobby the Marine Highway system. It cost us $40,000 last year, because the Marine Highway System changed their schedule. That was huge. That was huge. So we'll see what happens, but.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thought. So if you could change one thing about Ketchikan's school system, what would it be? Michelle?
Oh, gosh, there's so much.
You can say more than one.
I think there would be two things, and one of which is in the process of changing right now, and that would be a distance delivery method for our children, in the fact that we've got kids that are currently going to school that may need an additional class, or kids that are homeschooled, or kids that simply work better on their own. I'd like to see that grow. We are successfully growing that right now. The second thing that really bothers me is our Native education program. I don't believe that we have given that the attention that it deserves, and I'd like to see that given more attention. You know, I brought a thing from the district here. You know, we have 30% of our student body that is Alaska Native, and their scores have been increasing, and I'm so proud of their successes, but I think that they are still underserved, and we've got a great IPP committee, and I want to see that grow. This is part of our community. And not to say that Alaska Natives are the only part of our community that needs attention. I think that we're a community of Filipinos, Alaskans, and everyone else. All of our students deserve attention, but I just want to see a better success ratio in that front.
Mm-hmm. And so what is the difference or the statistic that you're looking at?
What I was looking at is our enrollment figures. And so if you were to look at our enrollment figures, we have 52% Caucasian, 1% African American, 3% Hispanic, 10% Asian, 30% Alaska Native or American Indian, 4% that are multi-ethnic, and 1% that are Pacific Islander.
So do you think the education focused on Alaska Native history and culture, that needs to be improved?
Or yes, I do.
Are there other aspects
Absolutely.
Of it that you think need to
We've
be improved?
We've come a long way. We've come a long way in 5 years. We've got the Tribal Scholars Program. We've got a number of different things that are in place, and I want to see that partnership with KIC and the IPP committee continue to thrive. And I just believe that those folks, they're part of our community. All of us are part of our community. All of us need to graduate. That's my thing, is I want to see every kid with a diploma. Mm-hmm. I see Glenn over there nodding.
So would you propose more courses in that area or other programs that reach out specifically to those students? What kind of changes would you like to see specifically?
I'd like to, you know, we've got a number of programs in place in terms of outreaching to students that might be falling short in terms of achievement. And I'd like to, and it's not necessarily Alaska Native students. It's across the board, depending upon which school that you look for. I'd like to see us continue to improve in those areas. You know, I'd like to be able to have us individualize educational programs that meet the needs of whatever demographic, whatever student need that there is, obviously being fiscally responsible.
So more of a net to catch the students who might be at
Absolutely.
Risk of dropping out.
There should be no other goal than having every single student graduate.
Glenn, what would you improve about the school district here?
It's funny that issue comes up. When Michelle came tonight, she had some interesting data on the graduation rates over the last few years. And in thinking about running for school board and looking more at public education, not just in Ketchikan, but in the state, there were a lot of surprises for me. Probably graduation rate was the most astounding.
And what is the graduation rate?
Well, statewide, it's about 71%, thereabouts. And what also caught my eye is the current administration is crowing that over the term that it's increased from an abysmal 68% to a slightly less abysmal 71% statewide. I think that should strike every Alaskan as an embarrassment. And I realize that there's a lot of social, there's a lot of cultural, there's a lot of economic, there's a lot of environmental and geographic reasons that graduation rates aren't going to be what they are in places that have, you know, terrific road systems and pavement everywhere. But just for some eyewash, again, my prior board service guides a lot of my thinking. But we had 1 year where our graduation rate slipped from 98% to 97%, and we had multiple board meetings with the seats filled with irate parents wanting to know what was going on in that district mm-hmm. and how this grad rate had slipped. And there are a lot of factors. I mean, you talk about a difficult thing to tackle, but my sense of it right now is that it's across the board. Michelle's referenced you know, Revilla and Fast Track and distance learning. And I think we talked about this at a chamber forum a couple weeks ago, but any mechanism to get this knowledge to these kids, we should be pursuing at that because we do have, there are difficulties with getting the kids in the classrooms. It's not for everyone. K-High structure is not for everyone. We have a Revilla alternative. You have Fast Track, you have the blended program. There are options, and I think we should be looking, really beating the bushes for every option available to increase that it, as a bare minimum. We're not talking about a place where kids are assumed to have a bachelor's degree 4 years after high school graduation, but I think we sure as heck can assume that they should have a high school diploma and do the things that we can do to help that. In a lot of cases, they're battling, you know, things at home. They're battling difficult situations. Sometimes it is financial. You know, the kid needs to go work. But whatever we can do to provide a broader range of options to get that kid to a diploma, I think we should be pursuing. This is really something statewide that when you look at the states ranked across all 50, and not to heap scorn on other states, but when you're in the neighborhood of Alabama and Mississippi, good things aren't happening. So that's something that we've got to get after. There's nothing wrong with Ketchikan deciding it wants to be a leader in that area.
Mm-hmm. Can I jump in for a second?
Yep, go ahead.
All right, so thank you, Glenn, for bringing that up, because if you were to look at the State Chamber of Commerce, they recently put out a report that says that only 27% of Alaska's fourth graders are proficient in reading compared to the national average. And just like you alluded to, the fact that we're bottom in the nation and that only 15 students out of 100 pass an AP exam or one out of 100 pass the AP foreign language exam. So that's all great, but I think those numbers are skewed. If you look at the real Ketchikan numbers, we actually have 88% of our grade four students that are proficient in reading. And if you're to look back at 2013-2014 AP exams, last year, 5 out of 10, 53% of the students earned a 3 or higher on that exam. And in 12 and 13, it was 6.7 out of 10 for 67%. So I would urge people to, you know, you get all these national numbers, these state numbers and everything else, but let's kind of be hyper-local here, and let's talk about what our students are doing. We're doing great things in our district. For goodness gracious, I mean, our last year, our seniors earned over $6 million in scholarships for various vocational and college scholarships. So, you know, I think to highlight these sort of reports are really just not positive for a discussion moving forward.
So you're saying we should focus on the statistics in Ketchikan and not
absolutely
statewide?
Absolutely. And the report will be coming out soon in the Ketchikan Daily News as to our report card. And I would caution people, you know, when they look at the graduation rates, I'm sitting here looking at this report that I picked up from Superintendent Boyle today. In 2011, it says that there was 77.06 graduation rate, whereas the state graduation rate was 69.6. In 2013, it was only 73%, and that's preliminary data. However, that's a cohort of the same students that started as freshmen and graduated as seniors. That doesn't include the kids that showed up their sophomore year because maybe they had Coast Guard parents or shipyard parents or anyone else's parents. Maybe they moved to Ketchikan. So really what our dropout rate was, and we're required, by the way, to report these numbers this way. Our real dropout rate, and this is district-wide, was 33 students out of 2,000-plus, which makes a 1.5% district-wide dropout rate. And believe it or not, we have students in elementary school that drop out.
So the 73% doesn't factor in students who...
No, it doesn't. It's a flawed figure, in my opinion.
And if I can weigh in on that, I will agree that when you're looking at a four-year cohort, that's a bad number, in that this is a transient place. I mean, you have students come and you have students go. That's not going to be representative of an actual graduation rate. If it's what the state requires in way of reporting, a different problem. But that aside, I still think there's great room for improvement.
Agreed.
In graduation rate statewide, this should really be a state issue, just collectively. And Michelle, I'm not picking on Ketchikan schools, but our graduation rate needs to be better than it is.
I agree. Yeah. Until it's 100%, I'm not satisfied.
And I think there are things within our reach that we could do to move that forward.
Is this year's report card?
It is. This is a copy, a flyer of this year's report card that will be in the Ketchikan Daily News.
Is there any other information on there that you'd like to highlight?
You know, I think so. I think what's really important is that we have a 93.6 district-wide attendance rate. I think what's also really important to highlight is the fact that we roughly have 40% that are economically disadvantaged. That shouldn't be a shocker to anyone. We have a lot of families that are out there struggling. But with that being said, think about all the things that you do for your students, all the things that our community does for students of all grade levels in all facets of their education, yet we still have 2 5-star schools, Blue Ribbon National Schools. Every single school, with the exception of 2, are 4-star schools. So we have 2 3-star schools, and they're, in my opinion, burgeoning schools, and that would be Revilla and Fast Track, because they just haven't come into their own.
Okay.
I agree. There's good things going on in these schools. When we moved here and saw the Blue Ribbon schools, a pleasant surprise. And so there's good things going on. I think we stay on it.
Do you want to explain what these star ratings are for people who don't know?
Well, it actually takes quite a bit of effort to become a 5-star Blue Ribbon school. How many did you have back in Pennsylvania in your district?
Well, probably I'm going to estimate 40% of the schools in our district.
And how many schools were in your district?
Quite a few.
Like 120?
No, it wasn't that large. We weren't a monster district. But the criteria, it's broad. You'd be surprised all of the factors that go into it. Some of them are well off of kind of what you would assume matter in terms of determining a Blue Ribbon school. It's pretty broad. Mm-hmm. And it's I think it does indicate good quality across the board in the operation.
The 2 5-star schools are?
Point Higgins and Ketchikan Regional Youth Facility.
And how does that facility factor into the school district?
Ketchikan Regional Youth Facility is for lack of a better term, you know, you're with Youth Court. Maybe you can talk about this, Glenn.
Go ahead, Glenn.
It's essentially a detention center for youth that the district is responsible and takes on the education of the kids that are lodged there. It's an evolving group. A lot of times these kids they're not held. If they're going to be detained for longer periods of time, they'll typically go north to McLaughlin, for instance, where they're big facilities. They have lots of comprehensive programs available for the kids that are there. But this is just a youth detention facility here in town. And
how is their education structured?
How they actually deliver
fast track a lot.
Yeah. Inside the school, I don't know. I know the kids are shuttled. I mean, they're transported. I've never been in the facility for the delivery.
I signed 2 diplomas for kids that were incarcerated that earned those diplomas via fast track.
And this was this past year?
Within the last 2 months.
Oh, okay. All right. Anything else to add about that topic? Okay. And again, if you have a question for our school board numbers, or for our school board members, the number is 225-9655. Another thing I wanted to ask about is the safety assessment from Safe Havens International. They took a comprehensive look at the schools here and had a lot of suggestions for how Ketchikan School District could improve student safety in terms of more emergency planning, changes to structures, adding more safety rules such as visitor check-in being more stringent. And it also found that Ketchikan had a it won't happen here attitude that contributed to some of the safety lapses that they saw. How much do you think the school district should be focusing on this report, and how much do you think should go into spending more on school safety? Glenn?
I don't have a sense of costs that would be associated with implementing all of the recommendations. Again, I hate to keep referring back, but the level of security in my observation is not what it was back east, that's for sure. So some of that mentality is probably true, and I probably share some of that. But is it incumbent upon the board and the administration to pay heed and look through those recommendations and implement the ones and make judgments on the ones that are necessary? There's going to be most likely a lot of wanna-dos, and there's probably going to be some pretty obvious have-to-dos on that list, that recommendation list. So I think it's the board's jobs and the administration's job to parse through that.
Okay. Michelle?
Well, as I equated during the board meeting, I was rather dismayed, given my military background, to see that the report was made public out of the gate. I would have rather seen some more discussion. I think it's worth some community conversation. I don't like the attitude that it won't happen here, because it could happen here. Recently, we had a situation on a school bus where a young man or young lady, I'm not quite sure, brought what appeared to be a gun on the bus, and it was actually a Nerf ball toy. So we can never be too careful. I think that we all enjoy in the community the fact that our schools are open and accessible, but we always need to be mindful of things that might happen. And I think this is a timely study in the sense that if we are, as we discussed before, having this potential growth in our community, it's worth having a conversation about and preparing for ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. So a caller who wanted to remain anonymous says to you, Glenn and Michelle, a challenge to come and sit in the trenches with teachers in the classrooms and not just be a passing face. What do you think about that suggestion?
I'm not quite sure how long you want us to be there. I spent half a day in the English classes at K-High this week, talking about Rotary Youth Exchange. Granted, that wasn't in the trenches teaching with you, but I would never assume to think that I would have the talent like you do. I have spent countless hours teaching my craft on career days at various schools, as well as volunteering in various venues. I really value what you do, and I'm not quite sure that I just don't think there's any value that you can put on being a teacher. I mean, it's an amazing sacrifice, and I would love to be able to spend more time in the classroom. As a matter of fact, I left the K-High classrooms this week with Rotary Youth Exchange, and man, I love the kids. And I told my friend that was there with me, I said, dang it, I should have been a teacher. I love this. I love being around kids. So yeah, I would like to be in the trenches, because I'm not quite sure I know what you go through every day, but I definitely try and feel that pain, because, holy smokes, 21 first graders. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Glenn?
We did that in our prior district, and I enjoyed it. I really did. It gave me a much, much better sense when you were considering proposals and requests from the administration. You had a much better sense of what was going on.
So you sat in on some of the classes?
Yeah, and it's funny, because over time, when we first began to do it, there were a number of board members that were interested in doing it. And when we first started doing it, the teachers were uneasy having us there. And it became a, a sense of, oh, I have an opportunity to really make an impact on the board member here to make them understand. Michelle referenced earlier the needs list, the wish list from each of the schools of other things that aren't being funded, but it was a wish list. And I presume, it may be incorrectly, but that many of those things on the list have been requested at various points from the building level supervisors, and they're still on the list because that wasn't granted, or their request wasn't passed on to district level administration. So to get a sense, when you see that wish list, it may be easy to say, well, my gosh, look at all these things they want. Spend a day in a classroom, and sometimes you get kind of hit over the head with how important it is that they have some of the things they're asking for. So I would value it. I'd love to do it.
So do you feel like the school board could do more to stay connected to the needs of the teachers and students?
Maybe from the question, we could surmise that. But I would hope that there are teachers across the board that would welcome that.
Mm-hmm. I wish I would hear from more of the teachers. I hear from a good amount of them. They'll message me or email me with a suggestion or a comment, and I wish I would hear from more.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that the school board can motivate people to get more interested in the process that the district goes through? You said that in the past there's been an issue with candidates running for a school board. Maybe that's part of it, but then also getting the public more involved in the process. What do you think is stopping people?
Oh, I have a very definite opinion on that. You know, 5 years ago when I ran, I was flabbergasted that no one ran. And then all of a sudden there were like 7 write-in candidates, which was super cool. That was great. I'm still flabbergasted that no one is running. But, you know, I wonder about folks. You know, we need to invest in our community, and folks need to step forward, and it's a positive experience, and I would hope that more people would. I don't know how you feel, Glenn. I mean, you step forward. You're relatively new in town. I think it's a great experience, and, you know, I think the one thing that we have accomplished in the past 5 years is the fact that there was no – and, of course, this is just my baby. This is my profession. But there was no real communication plan for communicating with the community. There was no social media. There was no email. There's really not flash alert that was utilized. There is, you know – websites weren't updated, et cetera. I feel like our communication plan is so much better for the community, and I'm pleased to see that. The other thing, and I'll leave it at this, is the fact that I am very proud of the fact that any citizen, and I've gotten notes about this, any citizen can feel proud and honored and respected to come in front of the school board and say whatever it is that they would like to say, and not feel belittled, because we appreciate their input.
Glenn?
I guess the level of public interest in what the board does sometimes is directly related to how unhappy they are. The idea that people will come around and contribute to the discussion that goes on all the time. I mean, I like the policy side of it. I really do. It's a little perverse probably, but I mean, public education policy, it touches all segments of the society, and I think it's very interesting. I would hope that people would take an interest in it, because you have an opportunity to shape it. I've talked to people and talked about my prior board service. The best part of that job was there were some initiatives that we helped the administration with. We funded. They were request proposals that we approved and were implemented, and we got to see that in a fairly short period of time bear fruit, where you saw some kid, it's a new program that you're running, and you see some kid that's jazzed, just really invigorated by what they have available to them, and they're loving it. And it really We had some initiatives that went after, it was back at the time when the standardized testing was really, No Child Left Behind was really riding herd at that point on public school districts. We implemented some initiatives there where trying to work within the confines of No Child Left Behind, but give the teachers the latitude that they weren't having to deliver very cubic little lessons according to a very cubic little lesson plan. That's why we do this, I think, is you're looking for a comprehensive education. You're looking for those opportunities where teachers can have the room and the latitude to go outside of the little cubes and really teach, not just what's in the book. So they're the kind of things that I like. And I you would hope that the average parent, they've got skin in the game. I mean, it's their children. Come on out and pay attention to it. These are interesting things, and there's some fun to be had with it. Mm-hmm. So,
all right, we've got just a very short time left. If you each would like to make a closing statement about why you're running for Ketchikan School Board, Michelle.
Just looking at the time, I would say that I would appreciate your continued support because we have more important work to do. I'm appreciative of all that our staff has done to educate our children. Very proud of our kids, and definitely get out and vote.
Glenn?
Likewise, it's just an opportunity. I'd like to think that I can contribute to the community in another way. I do some nonprofit work otherwise. And this is an area, like I said, I think I have an aptitude for it, and I have some experience in the area, and with the law background, I think I can bring some good judgment.
Okay. Glenn Brown and Michelle O'Brien are running for Ketchikan School Board. This is KRBD. It's 9 o'clock.
To golf on the radio. And it was the end of perhaps the entire shebang, I think that's a technical golf word, for the Ryder Cup tournament. Or maybe it was just the end of a match, I don't know. I really